Mr. Justice Brennan is unavoidably detained for a short period, but he will continue to participate in this case on the basis of the record, the recording of the oral argument, and so forth. You may continue, counsel.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, at this time I'd like to complete the argument on the equal protection phase of this case and get on to the second question, which involves the allegations of a burden on interstate commerce. In addition to the exceptions discussed yesterday, the appellants complain of two others. One is that grants longer load privileges to the hauling of pulpwood. Pulpwood is produced on Wisconsin farms, and this exception benefits farmers. They also complain of a twin trailer allowance in 55-foot lengths for hauling of milk from the point of production to the point of first processing. This also benefits farmers. None of these exceptions, which I've just mentioned, or those we discussed yesterday, favors intrastate commerce at the expense of interstate commerce. None of these isolates local industry from foreign competition. These are reasonable classifications. They're designed to promote a proper police power public purpose.
Could an Illinois milk producer get an exemption under the milk exemption to bring milk into Wisconsin?
No, I don't think so. No.
The regulation on its face doesn't seem to prohibit it, does it?
Well, I don't know quite how to answer that. I think it's designed to let Wisconsin farmers ship their milk to the point of first processing. I wasn't aware that it would be available for an out-of-state farmer.
Is there anything in the record about how the highway commission, whoever it grants those permits, has construed it?
I would think not, because it's very new. It happened really after this case was heard. It's very new.
Oh, this exemption was created after the case was heard?
That's my recollection, yes.
Mr. Harriman, yesterday during the argument, Mr. Lederer told us that, as I understood him at least, that no twin trailer combination of any length could be operated in your state without a permit. And yet I notice in the district court's opinion, it stated that Section 348.08 concerns vehicle trains and provides that except by permit, no vehicle shall draw more than one other vehicle where the overall length of the combination exceeds 55 feet, which would imply to me at least that a double trailer of 55 feet or less could be operated.
No, I don't think so, because the 55-foot limitation in the statute applies only to a two-vehicle two-vehicle unit, a tractor and a trailer.
Right.
It's limited to two vehicles.
A semi, so-called.
Yes, the semi is the illustration of
right.
it. Yeah.
So that no double trailer of any length can be operated
without a permit.
As a general rule, without a permit.
That's my understanding.
Is that a safety purpose? Or a shorter than 55-foot...
I think it has been considered to be a safety purpose.
I just don't understand that.
Well, I suppose it's history. The older case of... can't say the whole thing. The Sproles case arose out of Texas. The court said that a state may prohibit trains if it chooses to. It assumed that they're in length and in configuration of trains, and of course I'm talking about not railroad trains, that there was an element of danger.
So that if what you say and is correct, and certainly your brother on the other side agrees with you, the district court really wrote its opinion under a misapprehension, didn't it? When it said that a twin trailer of 55 feet or less could be operated without a permit.
I didn't realize that it said that.
I just read to you what it says.
I'm sorry.
And provides that except by permit, no vehicle shall draw more than one other vehicle where the overall length of the combination exceeds 55 feet. Now, In fact, your law provides that twin trailers of any length are prohibited.
Yes, that's true.
So that the district court misapprehended the law,
this,
didn't it?
You're
the state law.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. This provision regarding these milk trucks, I believe, was not called to the attention of the district court. I believe this is something that occurred after the decision.
Let's assume that's true, that the district court was under a misapprehension. How do you think that would have, what impact does that have on this case?
I don't see an impact on the case. I don't understand that was the motivation behind their decision. We point out that the police power may be exercised to promote agriculture and industry. It's not an improper thing to do. Appellants argue that if you make a special exception for others, you must do it for all, or at least you must do it for us, the plaintiffs in this case. There's a similar argument that if you regulate one abuse, you must regulate other similar abuses. This court has rejected that analysis in Sproles versus Binford. They said the legislature does not have to regulate all or none and is not bound to cover the whole field. Then in Railway Express versus New York, a more recent case, equal protection does not require that all evils of the same type be eradicated or none at all. With the court's approval, I'd like to proceed to the burden on interstate commerce aspect of this case. We hope to have a little time to discuss that.
Well, let's get our facts straight on the burden. When these trucks come through with the two trailers, they have to unhook when they hit the Wisconsin line.
Yes.
And then when they leave, they hook up again.
Yes.
And that does not interfere with interstate commerce.
No, we don't contend that it doesn't. It obviously is a burden. It obviously is a burden. We think that it's a permissible one, but it obviously is a burden. No question of it. This court has announced two different tests in deciding interstate commerce questions. The first one is the rational basis test, announced in South Carolina versus Barnwell, and which this court applies to highway safety cases. It's also announced another test we call the balancing test. It appears to have appeared first in the long train case in Arizona, Southern Pacific versus Arizona, and more recently stated in Pike versus Bruce Church. The rational basis test has been applied in the safety cases and the balancing test in other cases. The question before this court is whether the balancing test should be extended and applied to highway safety cases. The older cases clearly pointed out that size and weight are elements of safety and may be taken into account by legislatures in regulating highways. The leading case in 1938, South Carolina versus Barnwell, it said that regulation of the use of state highways is peculiarly of local concern. Now, the court has never retreated from this statement. They also said such regulations are inseparable from its substantial effect on interstate commerce. And there they announced the test, this rational basis test, whether the legislature in adopting the regulations has acted within its province and whether the means chosen are reasonably adapted to the end sought. They went on to point out that the state may impose non-discriminatory restrictions as safety measures, and said the court does not sit as a legislature and that the reasonableness and wisdom are not for the court. The court does not substitute its judgment, even where interstate commerce is involved. And it said the court looks to see whether the legislative choice is without rational basis. That's the statement of the rational basis test.
Yet Mr. Harriman, I'm frank to say that I'm disturbed by this long list of exemptions that Wisconsin has. Don't those exempt products and the like create just as much safety hazard on Wisconsin roads as the non-exempt?
I think comparing any one truck in any one spot at any one time, I think the answer would have to be yes. The hauling of from plant to plant that we have like in American Motors, is a limited trip. We discussed it yesterday. It's 45 miles. These milk hauls, I don't know just what these milk hauls or where they go, but they go from the farm to the plant where the milk is hauled, delivered for processing. Pulpwood is hauled usually from a farm, a field, a woods somewhere to one of our paper mills. And, of course, these car carriers run all over the state. And obviously, their length is as dangerous or non-dangerous, depending on which side of this case you take, as perhaps any other vehicle. But I think it's a justified police power exception, because automobiles are very long, and you can only get a few in a trailer. This extra 10 feet makes it possible for them to haul an extra two vehicles. And, of course, the state apparently takes the position that it's better to have only that many long trucks running than to have a large, much larger number of long trucks running.
Do you suggest that the state can be more tolerant on the safety factors with respect to local industries than interstate haulers?
Yes, if it's based upon a proper police power purpose. But I don't think that many of these are more tolerant on the locals than they are on interstate haulers. The hauling of these automobiles is one. Like shipping from Milwaukee to Kenosha on this plant-to-plant, I mean, that's something by its very nature, intrastate commerce. That kind of a thing couldn't be applied to interstate commerce, I mean, by its very nature.
Do any of the exemptions apply so as to favor interstate common intrastate common carriers over interstate common carriers?
Well, and I realize you're asking me for examples. I mean, without thinking of a specific example, I'd have to say no. I don't think they apply in such a way as to discriminate against out-of-state carriage.
You mean none of the, in the case of none of the exemptions, are the goods hauled for hire?
Oh, I'm sorry, hauled for hire. I don't understand that our law discriminates between a for-hire hauler and what we call a private carrier.
Well, I know, but is any of the milk carried for hire? Are any of the logs carried for hire?
I'm sure the milk is carried for hire.
And yes. An interstate carrier could carry that as well as an intrastate carrier, couldn't it?
Yes, and some of those shipments would be interstate because they would go from the farm across the state line.
Anything the record to show that any local options were denied, or isn't it a fact that all you have to do is to go in and say, I'm a local resident of Wisconsin and I'd like an exception?
Well, I don't think you can do that. It'd have to fit into
one. Is there anything the record to say you can't?
I think that the record shows that we have a series of statutory exemptions.
And you have a whole series of
exceptions.
You have a whole series of exceptions.
Yes, and you'd have to fit into those. And
including
if you did,
trucks that are large as the ones that are being excluded.
Yes. The policy of the state is to have no trucks over 55 feet, but there are these exceptions.
Unless
that we've
they're
discussed.
Local.
No, I don't think unless they're local. The calling of automobiles is the best example that they don't have to be local.
Although you do have a local one right there, American Motors.
That one, yeah, that's by its very nature local, yes, because the two plants are located in the state.
What evidence, if I may get to the first point, did you put in about safety? The state put in.
The evidence that the state had, well, we had two witnesses. There are two witnesses. A man by the name of Robertson testified as to a study he'd made for I believe it's the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety, comparing collisions between vehicles and comparing particularly large vehicles colliding with small vehicles and counting the severity of the damage and the number of deaths and in which vehicle the deaths occurred and things of that kind. That was the evidence we put in. The other evidence was the testimony of our Highway Commission chairman, which I alluded to yesterday, who testified to the reasons behind Wisconsin's attitude that he knew because he'd been in the legislature and he'd talked to constituents.
And his testimony was that the citizens of Wisconsin didn't like these big trucks.
That's pretty well summarizes what
he said. Did any of the letters say we don't like out-of-state big trucks?
I don't know that. I don't know that happened. It's the bigness that scares them.
That's what they were against.
Yeah, sure.
And that's the only evidence the state put in.
Well, yes, that's true. That's true.
To allow you to say that the state was interested in safety.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but...
And you put in no evidence to contradict all this government.
That's true.
You put in no evidence to contradict that.
That's true. The evidence, if we had it, would have been in the mind of the legislators as to why they acted this way. And the best we could do was to offer Mr. Huber's testimony, who had been there.
Could I ask?
Yes.
You may have covered this, and I missed it. Did you say you agreed or you didn't agree with the standard for expressed by the court in the Pike case?
Well, I agree with it, but I don't believe that it's applicable to highway safety cases.
You think that's just in safety cases, it's a much looser standard? Just the rationality.
Well, in safety, it's looser. Pike says so. Mm-hmm. Pike makes the point of saying, but this is not like safety cases, and referred to the long train case. Now, in the long train case, they were announcing, this court was announcing, that those restrictions were too much on the burden on commerce.
Well, yes, it may have put them aside. May have put them aside as not judging them, but do you think it set a different standard?
Yes. In the long train case, they did some balancing. And there, they specifically said, we point out...
Well, Pike is not a non-balancing standard.
I'm sorry, Pike was not a non-balancing?
No.
That's right, Pike was a balancing standard.
Yes.
So was the long train case. And in the long train case, this court specifically said that this is very different from the highway safety situation. So each of these balancing cases has, in effect, distinguished the highway safety matters. In Railway Express Agency case... This court said that as to the burden on interstate commerce, great leeway is allowed local authorities. We're talking about highways now. Even though the regulation materially interferes with interstate commerce. I've mentioned the long train case and how they distinguished Barnwell.
The court has certainly made some distinction, hasn't it, between trains where the train operates over tracks owned by the railroad company and highways where the trucks operate over highways owned by the state, in effect?
I don't recall that distinction being made in the cases. The point was that the highway safety is more pertinent to state regulation than train safety. That's the way I read the long train case.
Well, you think that, then, is the distinction between Arizona versus Southern Pacific and Barnwell?
Yes. The Bibb case was one involving an Illinois regulation regarding mudflaps, and it was very restrictive because only Illinois required it and Arkansas prohibited it, and the other states would accept either one. The court... there said that if it were only the cost of this thing, we wouldn't strike down the law. We'd apply Sproles, Barnwell, and Maurer. They also said the same thing if we had to resolve the safety issues. But they said here the burden is too great because of this problem of interlining. Interlining is the problem, is the function of transferring traders between carriers. They said here the burden is too great because of interlining. There's the full crew law case that we have cited where the court said they would not attempt to balance. And then the Pike case where they did develop this balancing test and said that it will be upheld, the statute will be upheld, unless the burden is clearly excessive in relation to the local benefits. But they said, we are not here dealing with state legislation in the field of safety where the propriety of local regulation has long been recognized. And that's when they cited the Long Train case.
Didn't cite Barnwell, did it?
I believe not. There, they, for that proposition, they cited just the Long Train case. I believe they did not cite Barnwell.
That's correct.
And the problem of interlining, which was so pertinent in the Bibb case, we say is not much of a problem here. In this, these twin trailers. We say that the Wisconsin law doesn't prevent interlining. Trailers can be hauled singly. This makes it more expensive, but it doesn't make the problem of having to change fender guards.
As a matter of physical, mechanical fact, can each one of these double trailers be hitched onto a semi and hauled?
Hitched singly, yes, yes.
There's no difference.
They're
in the,
interchangeable.
In the
They're
coupling,
the same
right?
unit. Yeah. Yeah. We say that Bibb stands as an authority.
You do have to put a third.
A big part.
When you do put it on, you have to put a flywheel on the back.
The all you have
trailer.
To do is take off the rear dolly, and the rear trailer will fit on the, it's called the fifth wheel, this flat disc that's on the back of a semi.
On the back of a tractor.
Yeah. Yeah, they fit. Bibb
I'm
stands.
Talking about on the back of the first trailer. You have to put another dolly on that, don't you?
No. Well, to hook up two trailers, yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, there's a dolly. Yeah.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Lederer?
May it please the court. In answer to your question, Mr. Justice Stewart, on interchanging these vehicles, it is true that each of the vans of a twin trailer can be hauled separately by a twin trailer tractor. But a twin-trailer tractor is a different piece of equipment than a semi-trailer tractor. A twin-trailer cannot be interchanged with a semi-trailer tractor. And similarly, a semi-trailer van cannot be placed on a twin-trailer tractor. Thus, Wisconsin, by forcing use of semi-trailers in the state of Wisconsin and through the state of Wisconsin, interferes with interchanging of equipment because the Wisconsin equipment is not compatible with the equipment used in the other states, the equipment which is the industry standard for general commodity carriers. I think it pertinent in this case that the State Highway Commission, who are the authors of the administrative regulation which bans twin trailers of any length or prevents permits from being issued for them, the chairman of the commission was asked whether he had any opinion as to the safety of these vehicles. He stated that he was not prepared to comment on that and would choose not to comment on it. No Wisconsin highway official has testified that twin trailers are unsafe. Indeed, the only Wisconsin highway official who had an opinion as to their safety, Mr. James Karn, who was the motor vehicle commissioner of the state, testified that he had reviewed the record, not the record in this case, but he had reviewed various reports and surveys in preparing to testify before a public hearing, and he had concluded that twin trailers were safe. No one in this entire record has stated that twin trailers are unsafe. No one. The consistent opinion of the experts, the consistent opinion of state officials who've had experience with these vehicles, is that they are safe. I think this factor removes this case from other cases. The court is not called upon to second guess the state legislature. Here the state legislature, or the Highway Commission more properly, has made a decision apparently on no data. What it has done is it permitted an anachronism to exist in the state. They are unable to justify the burden that they've imposed on interstate commerce by anything other than the supposition that it might serve safety, and that supposition has been destroyed by the evidence in this case. Only if there is an irrebuttable presumption, a presumption where it does not matter what the facts are, an irrebuttable presumption that vehicle size is tied to safety, do I think that the state of Wisconsin should prevail in this case? Because that is the sole thing that they have going for them, the presumption and the assumption, which seems a reasonable one on the surface, that larger vehicles are less safe vehicles. That is not the case here. I thank the court.
Mr. Lederer. On the discriminatory aspect of your claim, do you think that your client as a carrier can raise a claim of discrimination as between Wisconsin manufacturers and out-of-state manufacturers if the treatment between interstate carriers and intrastate carriers is even-handed?
I believe they can in regard to the interplant permits, because those permits apply not just to the manufacturer, but to the manufacturer or its carrier. But there is no difference in the application that I know of to the carriers themselves.
So
in other words, if we were to assume that American Motors, or perhaps Carvel Boat Company, which runs boats from one side of Wisconsin to the other, desired to hire an out-of-state manufacturer or out-of-state carrier to carry its boats, presumably it could. But that would seem unlikely given the situation.
But you don't contend there's discrimination as to the in manufacturer's right to hire an interstate carrier as opposed to an intrastate carrier for that purpose, do you?
No, I don't think there's discrimination there. I think the discrimination that exists here is the fact that Wisconsin has exempted so many of its own industries, those that are of importance to the state, from the regulation while continuing to apply the regulation to industries not important to the state.
Can you, as a carrier, object to discrimination against an industry if there's no discrimination between carriers?
Yes, I think we can.
What's your authority for that?
Hasn't the rule been that rather than discrimination against carriers, interstate carriers, isn't it the distinction between intrastate commerce and interstate commerce?
Yes, I think
if a carrier that engages in interstate commerce hires out to do some intrastate commerce, it is still engaging in intrastate commerce at the time it does it. I mean, if you hired out to carry, to do the interplant carrying, you would still be in intrastate commerce, I suppose, for that purpose.
That would be correct. And that would, I suppose, provide a basis for discrimination between interstate carriers and intrastate carriers, in the sense that many of the exemptions that Wisconsin gives, it gives only to operations within the state. Certainly that's true in regard to the interplant permits. I thank the court.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.